Since the second season of Daredevil Born Again launched, we've heard from critics that every episode is a linear step up. I'm going to tell you why today that maybe wasn't quite the case for me. Here we go. Let's go. Shock. Teaser. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a podcast that's hosted by myself, Kyle Scunawill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. Robbie, we were just talking off air. This has been a crazy era for things just because of my travel schedule and whatnot. I've watched Begonia. I've watched all of DTF St. Louis. I've watched the Daredevil stuff. I'm actually watching stuff right now and not just playing video games or watching sports. And all these different projects have got my mind in a blender. If you've seen Begonia, you know what I'm talking about. That shut off and I was like, I need to tell somebody about this. DTF St. Louis just finished and I literally texted you. I have this overwhelming sense of I need to process what I just witnessed, but I don't have anyone watching this except for you.
Yeah.
So I was like, emergency, like text me back. Like I feel so alone. Who do I talk to about this?
Oh yeah. I mean, and Candace and I just finished it. So the timing was great because we were just like, oh wow.
Okay. Yeah. No spoilers. We,
the nice thing is we have been watching Rooster, which is the Steve Carell HBO show.
Apple TV Plus.
No, it's HBO.
Is it?
Yeah. But it's funny you say that because it is Bill Lawrence. So it's the same team that's made like Ted Lasso and Shrinking.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
But we probably haven't talked about this. I have always, you know, or grew up as a big Scrubs guy. I like that kind of humor. It's a little bit of like the heart on your sleeve thing that I've always liked. And it's kind of like got the, you know, it's like humor with a little wholesome stuff thrown in. And
I love that.
So Rooster, you know what's funny is
we're a little bit different that way, by the way. Barely. Yeah. That's not totally my scene. Like, I'm not a Scrubs guy.
I think that sort of goes all the way back to like the very origins of the like Iron Man, Captain America thing.
Yes.
Like
I think that's actually representative of other.
But
Yeah.
But Rooster has been this really nice kind of like just feel good. Steve Carell doing like just a very Steve Carell character. Like he's actually pulling a little bit. It's not at all a Michael Scott character, but there are certain mannerisms that are kind of the most Michael Scott I've seen him be since The Office. It's nice because the HBO schedule has that come on after DTF St. Louis.
Just
anyway.
A little pick me up.
Yeah, just a nice palate cleanser. But I am. I'm curious if anyone else is watching that show because we've actually been liking it a lot, and I'm, you know, it's kind of just it's your like lighthearted comedy sort of thing. But
I feel like Stick, that show I watched on Apple TV, was kind of like that, just with golf.
Yeah, but which like I know, a little that's like the Owen Wilson one, right?
Yeah, it's not.
I still need to watch that.
Not like a great show or anything.
Yeah, but it's like
palate cleanser, like feel good kind of story, like you know, a little wholesome. Not wholesome, but sincere maybe is the word.
I've
been trying to explain DTF St. Louis to people. That's probably one, or at least one of the most confusing shows to explain to somebody what it is. Because it's truly hilarious to me. Like, that is my humor.
Both of us thought it's like some of the funniest writing.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but the older detective being exposed to things. And like when he's taking notes, the notes make me laugh so hard.
The notes.
He's just writing like a three letters or, you know, like.
The line like, is that for the kicker or the nut man?
Yeah. Exactly. At the end. Yeah. No spoilers. He makes. So it is my humor. Like, but then it's also really weird and zany in that, like, in the middle of this show that's funny, there's like an actual musical number. As an example, David Harbour's gymnastics routine.
Yeah.
Like it's also
that whole show was like a real standout performance from David Harbour, in my opinion.
Oh, and Bateman.
For sure. But I really like, I really liked seeing Harbour in that mode because I've kind of only ever seen him in sort of the serious Stranger Things mode, or like when he's in the MCU, it's like such a kind of, you know, he's got the accent and it can be like cartoonish and I love that character, but I don't even really like, it feels it's like kind of a merging of those two here.
Yeah, because he's still funny, and but he's like sincere. He's almost like so sweet, I guess.
And the timing of some of that stuff, like
he's the opposite of Red Guardian's narcissist, kind of in the show.
Yeah, and like Candace and I would just quote things all week. Like, I want to be on the cool side of the curtains with Carol. The writing was great.
It's funny. It's weird. The acting performances are great. So that's a good setup. But then. It's a murder mystery. Like they're essentially, it's not a thriller, but like,
yeah,
you're trying to figure out what happened. And by the way, it's not a spoiler. It happens in the first episode.
Right.
And then it's super heavy and depressing.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's hypersexual at times. Hypersexual, but in a really weird way. Like a romantic way.
I was surprised that it ended on as heavy of a note as it did. But then the more I thought about it, I think that was appropriate. But because the tone of the show was so often funny and kind of goofy, even whenever it was dealing with heavy stuff, I expected that final note to not be quite so grim. But Anyway.
Yeah,
okay. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Daredevil.
Yeah, okay, but, talk about Daredevil. Speaking of Grimm, Born Again, Episode 5, our first impressions.
What do you think?
I like it.
I know, it's great, right?
Another!
It was everything for everyone.
Yes, I think it works.
Rob, kick us off. What are your first impressions?
Oh, man. I had no idea what to expect with this episode. We ended the last one with that cliffhanger of Vanessa maybe being dead or being on the verge of death. This one was a real, I think I liked the whiplash and the kind of fake out of you going through all of that and it seeming like she's recovering. But then like the way they did the pineapple juice thing, you know, something's kind of off.
Yeah, right.
I thought that there were some subtle things there. I think like my like big first impressions before getting into the nitty gritty of it. One, really, really great stuff from D'Onofrio in this episode. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
And I thought it was great primarily because, you know, if we went straight from, we needed some kind of episode like this, whether it was him sitting by her hospital bed and going through that process with her there, or whether it was some kind of flashback episode, like with a funeral, we needed some kind of moment of him being a little bit more tender before he goes into like rage mode. Mm-hmm. Just because they have like more than maybe any other relationship in the entire Daredevil TV history have really built up the significance of that relationship. So I thought that it was like that all felt earned. That's my one big takeaway. We can get into the specifics of that. The other one for me, I really did like, and you know, I mean, again, getting back to the kind of like wholesome thing, I'm kind of a sucker for the good guy, like, choosing to do the right hard thing in that moment, like when it's tough. And so I think
Daredevil and Bullseye, you mean?
Like, yeah. And I thought that moment of like him remembering what Foggy did with that guy right at the time when he's like thinking of abandoning Bullseye, and the fact that I really liked the way that all kind of came to a head, because it really like, there was some emotional weight to that. Like the fact that this is the guy that murdered Foggy, and it's making him think of how Foggy himself like gave all of his money away to this guy that had bullied him.
That's
just
right.
To like give him another shot. And so now it's like he's sitting here thinking that like as much as he hates the guy for killing Foggy.
Foggy would have like, forgiven him.
Right. And I like I really thought like all of the stuff between Matt and Poindexter, like that all felt really great and believable. Like it wasn't something where like Matt is all of a sudden like totally fine with Bullseye and forgetting all that. Like you can feel the tension and the kind of like violence that he's holding back. But I just like I it was some of the best acting from Wilson Bethel that we've mm-hmm. gotten, like, I think, period. Like, I really loved the last episode in kind of a different, more, like, unhinged way. But I thought that some of the scenes he had with Charlie Cox here felt like he brought kind of a different sort of nuance to it, but again, still in character. So those were, like, my big takeaways in terms of the things that I loved and the things that I kind of came away thinking of, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think today the segments don't work quite as well for me. So here's what I want to do. I want to get into the, what worked and what didn't work. The friendly feedback right away, just because if I say all my generic thoughts here,
sure.
It is broken into categories basically of like, what did I love and what did I question? I agree with everything you just said. And so I'm going to go into more detail here on our friendly feedback.
I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you something.
I'll tell you what.
I got to tell you something.
Let me tell you something.
I'm going to tell you a few things.
Just a reminder, if you're just finding this podcast, check out panelboundcomics.com and use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK to get these comics that we've been talking about over these last few weeks, like the one Robbie's holding right here. Which one is that?
If you got the video here.
Oh, hello.
Just look at that book, man. This is the first volume of the Bendis run, who, by the way, is a creative consultant on the Born Again season 2 series. I don't know if he was on season 1 as well, but
that's incredible.
It is.
It looks awesome.
It's like a beautiful book. And also, this is just, if you're looking to get into modern Daredevil comics, I think the best entry points are either the Bendis run, just moving forward, because it's like Bendis and Brubaker and Wade and Soul and then Zdarsky, or just jump to the Zdarsky run, which is another good entry point. But this is so much the source for the Netflix Daredevil stuff and a lot of what we've gotten here that I would highly, highly, highly recommend it. And it reads almost more like a, more like a crime drama at times than it does a superhero story, which I think works well for Daredevil.
So, I love that. Panel Bound Comics. That's right. Promo code friends from work. Save some money. Okay. So I think what doesn't work for me is, in general, like I talked about last week with the ranking system with Neapolitan style pizza or inland golf courses. In general, flashback clip episodes are not my favorite genre. So, you know, I do think it's appropriate and we needed it. I'm with you that the biggest what worked to me is getting Vincent D'Onofrio acting his butt off, but also getting a little bit of a breath of him having to process that. If we didn't have this episode, he just has this shocking thing and immediately turns into kill mode. Like, I think it was a little bit more impressive to see him turn into caring for another human mode. If you remember, like, even in Into the Spider-Verse, you know, Kingpin is driven crazy because he lost his family. I mean, that's the triggering, canon event. And so I think if you just rushed over that real fast, like, yes, he was sad at the end of episode 4, but to not have this would have been a miss.
Yeah.
But in general, I just think I have a bias toward the flashback style episodes feel always like detours to me. Feels a little bit like Lamentous. Yeah. It's not, but like right away I'm like, okay, we're going to do like a slow down and make sure we understand these characters and where they came from episode. And that makes sense in the story. It's just not totally my preference. So it's not even really a critique. It's just like, I'm never going to like this style of episode as much as like episode 4.
I mean, it by design halts the momentum.
That's exactly what I wrote. I wrote halt or grinding to a halt. That's what I wrote.
Yeah. And again, I think that they would say that's a feature, you know, so I think that it's okay to.
Just like a golf course that's not on the ocean. Like, it can be the best version of that. I'm not saying that. It's just in general, it's not going to be my preference. Okay. the big takeaways. I don't know that we've seen Vincent D'Onofrio act like this specifically. I mean, I was struck by how much they leaned into, like, he was almost, like never at the doctors or anything. Did he like snap into kingpin mode where I thought he was going to like kill the nurse or, bring in a doctor and then go like, you failed me, I'm going to murder you. He still may do that, by the way.
Right.
But like in this episode, he was tender and watching him process the pain was so beautiful. I thought he did it really well. How he handled the Vanessa stuff was, I thought it was perfect. Like seeing him almost like cry, call her baby and talk to her sweet and get the pineapple juice anyways, but still be very firm. Like, no, I want the pineapple juice first. He's still running the show and in charge. Just totally a dimension of the character and the actor that I personally haven't seen. You know, when I think of Vincent D'Onofrio, this is not fair. I obviously think of the Daredevil stuff, but like my brain goes to like the Jurassic Park stuff where he's still just kind of like the, I just don't see this side of him ever really in what I've seen. Yeah. And so I really appreciated that. And that was by far the best part of the episode to me.
And I liked that Vanessa had several lines kind of recognizing how out of character he was being there.
Right.
Like, and you, I thought there was so much in that performance, like so many layers to it where I think you can really see on his face what's like, there's the him kind of trying to put on a face for her to some level. Like then beneath that you have this real like desperation and kind of fear. And then there's this kind of hope that he's through it and he's still trying to control the situation, but he's also trying to let her lead it to some degree. So it's like, there's a lot, like you can see a lot of warring stuff. And even the way that he's kind of doing these little winces and like smiles and trying to like anticipate what she needs, you can see that he is still the kingpin and that he's feeling the situation like get out of his control and that's not something he's comfortable with, but it's something where he doesn't want to exert control over her. He wants to exert control over
like the situation.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it really was like, it's one of those things where I think it, that like the episode to me, it needed to exist for that. Now agreed. I think one question I had was like, getting into the flashback piece, I really liked seeing, I liked the Matt and Foggy stuff. I thought it was in character. I thought it worked. I wonder if it was a little forced to make all of that in one, you know, to like.
Okay. So the positive side of it, like said, is the special, like truly special takeaway was the whole Mercy conversation and getting to see it go back and forth in time of Matt, like you're saying, wrestling with this guy killed Foggy. He's awful. But then there's this, like, remember how Foggy is. Like, Foggy wouldn't have even liked me to leave him or walk away. Like, he deserves a second chance. Your Bible talks about mercy, which another positive, back in the church, having the conversation with Dex about can he free his mind up, you know, like, can it even turn? And does he deserve to die? Should Matt let him die? And then bouncing that all off the memory of Foggy. And I do think that, this is a weird thing. So that's what worked to me. Foggy felt really in character to me. Like that felt like Foggy that I remember.
Yeah.
I would argue a little bit kind of what you're maybe getting at is like Matt felt a little forced from the Matt perspective to me. Like I understand like the conversation about like finding the loophole in the warrant. I understand what they're doing, but something about that to me felt a little like you're saying forced or I don't know. Like the way you felt when BB and Karen talked in the first episode, like something that kept it from being an A- or an A to you.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that in the flashback with me where I'm like, this is a little bit not exactly hitting like you want it to. And then another, what didn't work, part of it might be the practical hurdle, like the de-aging or like not de-aging. Like I never am a fan of de-aging in general. Like it's always hard to pull off. And then when you, if you don't pull it off, though, like with some of the characters, like you know, like Wesley, this is not a knock, like clearly looks older than he did, you know, then. And
I mean, it's
and
been 11 years.
Exactly. But it's, but they're doing a flashback and Matt, like his facial structure is clearly older and like more grizzled, well, which again.
Well, and like his stubble has gray in it in the flashback scene.
Right.
You know,
which so is like if they don't de-age it, then I'm making, so I guess it's a lose-lose. It's like, I'm either crushing you for like aging, you know, it looks normal, or that you, the de-aging technology looks a little bit, you know, like with Vanessa. So anyways, maybe because of that and because of like them arguing over that warrant thing and Matt so arguing like for the opposite side, I don't know. It was good, just maybe not like a slam dunk.
I would say I'm totally with you on the de-aging stuff. I tracked that. And then, you know, like, the way that I like to deal with that stuff as I'm watching is like I clock it, it distracts me a little bit, and then I'm gonna try to kind of just like set it over here.
Right. I gotta emphasize this. It's so not a big deal.
Oh no,
I have a podcast breaking it down, but this is not a like Miss Marvel episode, whatever.
No.
Four. That's not what I'm talking about. It's not a left turn. This is just like little things that I'm like, okay, maybe not a step up from last week.
Again, talking about like what I said last week, like it's so great watching an episode where I don't feel like I'm going to have to explain anything away. I didn't feel that at all in this episode. I thought it was very much like on pace. Like I came away like just as invested in the show. And like, again, the high highs, like the highs here were very high. I think that for me, I'm okay even with the Matt characterization. I do think that there's maybe a little bit and again, it's been a long time since I watched season one. My recollection of season one was that it was a little bit the reverse, that Matt was kind of the more like, let's go out of our way to defend these people.
Yeah, Foggy was like, we need the money, right? Like, just take the cases.
So it did feel a little bit like they were kind of swapping roles there, especially since they're going back to that era.
Right. Could they not have gone back to like season two era or something where they had this conversation or
yeah, which they, and then they would also not have to like de-age as much. But I also like, I get that they would maybe say, yeah, well, this is before that. Like this is the period immediately preceding Nelson and Murdoch when they're still at this big law firm. And so it's,
right.
You know, but you're right.
Season one is a lot of mapping. Like, no, we have to defend this person because it's the right thing to do. And Foggy being like, we don't have any money. Like you can't take these cases. We're not right.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of how I remembered it. Like, Matt's the sort of holy warrior and Foggy's like the nice guy, but he's like, yeah, but let's be, you know, realistic to some degree.
Shrewd, yeah.
And so I think that like, I like the focus on Foggy's heart and that does feel consistent with who he is. And
not shrewd. I would never use that word for Foggy. Keep going.
No, I mean, but I think like
you can kind of retcon.
I can no prize it and say that, okay, you look at Matt's upbringing. He has this really intense situation with his parents. He loses his dad in this really kind of horrific way. And then he's essentially raised by Stick, who is very much a like no mercy kind of a guy. Like, and that's the whole clash that they have is, you know, there being moments where Stick's like, we got to kill this person. And Matt struggles with that. But whenever we see that version of Matt that really struggles with that, that is more like older, you know, Nelson and Murdoch forward Matt. So I think you could argue that like, as he's coming into that period, he would have a little bit of a like harder take on criminals based on his time with Stick and based on what happened to his dad and based on like just the kind of wreckage of his life and what like organized crime has done to him.
Right.
And so I kind of like, again, it feels like a retcon, but I'll take it because I think that it elevates Foggy a bit and I see what they're doing there to say that like Foggy's the one, even if later we see Foggy himself not always like taking that stance as boldly as Matt will, I think I like the idea that Foggy was kind of instrumental in giving Matt that piece of his worldview, and even kind of anchoring it in his faith, like, which we know is important. But Foggy saying, like, hey, look, like, this is what you're supposed to believe, right? You know, like, so it still is consistent with what we know about Matt, but it kind of adds this little, you know, insert bracket. I think the thing that I wonder about, it's really clever the way that they interweave this stuff. And I think that from a writing, like the television writing of it all, I think is pretty impressive. Like they make it feel fairly natural for the most part, like the way that you're telling the story of Fisk and Vanessa, at the same time you're telling the story of this kind of meaningful interaction with Matt and Foggy. I think that there were just a few moments where I'm like, I like that this is all together and packaged, and I think I would rather have one big flashback episode than like multiple. It is a little like convenient that Fisk and Matt are both dealing with these real life situations that are causing them to both remember like the exact same night in their lives where they didn't come into contact, but they were both like having these like formative experiences. Like it felt like an excuse to flash back to this very particular time. And in that sense, felt like it was like maybe verging on like a fan service thing where it's like and did we need Wesley in the episode?
Right. And how did you feel about Buck being inserted into that story?
Like, again, I liked the little bit of Buck background, but I guess I'm just wondering, like, I think my take is I'm pretty okay with all of the flashback stuff in a vacuum. There were just times where it felt like, okay, we've decided to do a flashback episode, so we're now going to do it. Like, there's a part of me that's surprised we didn't get like a Ben Urich like flash here, just because it felt a little bit like, let's just like really like go back and like play the hits. Like,
I'm not going to repeat anything you said, but how would you not feel like this isn't a little bit fan service-y, right? Like, this sure feels like what I said when we kicked this whole thing off, which is like, they're going to make an ode to Netflix. This was like,
yeah,
look,
yeah,
you didn't like Born Again season one because it was too Disney-ified. Here, we're going to give you like the Netflix show. And like, is there positive, like, are there positives that come from that? 100%. Like we talked about.
Yeah.
And but come on. Like Wesley and Foggy were brought back here mainly so that people were like, oh, Foggy.
Right.
I love Foggy, which is great, but yeah. Like, you know,
and the Wesley thing, you know, it's a very small part, and I think they would say it immediately tells you what era we're in without them having to say, you know, like early 2015 or 2014 or whatever. Yeah. So I think and it's fun, and like, you know, everyone loves the Wesley character
painting again back.
Yeah, so it's like, but again, I think there's a part of me that thinks, like, maybe that piece of the, like, that piece of the flashback feels really relevant to the Wilson story. And then, like, the other flashback obviously feels really relevant to the Daredevil Bullseye stuff. I just, there are parts where I'm like, the fact that, like, it's one of those things that happens a lot in comics, and it's like as the continuity grows and you see people try to go back and insert certain things in where it's like, yeah, but okay, sure, here's Amazing Fantasy 15, like the origin of Spider-Man, but here's this story that you didn't quite see that takes place between like page 10 and 11 of that issue, and he actually like met Norman Osborn in this whole period and they had this thing, and you're like, sure.
It's people saying Tom Holland claiming that little kid in Iron Man 2 is actually Spider-Man meeting Iron Man.
Right, right. Where it's like,
well, maybe they didn't meet.
Yeah, like, it's, like, sure, like, it's, that's fine. It feels like that very clearly was not the intention when that movie was made.
Right. And it doesn't ruin it, but you can believe whatever you want to believe. It doesn't change. But
the fact that, they had this one night that was very important to all of them. And it also is the first time Buck kind of got introduced into the mix. And also, does it really feel necessary? And that, Buck doesn't even end up killing the guy, right? And maybe that's part of the point. He had a mullet, to show, he's aged.
Well, or that, that Foggy got one up on him, kind of. But I think the point of that was just to be look, he's been around. He knew Wesley. Fisk has been hiring him for a long time. I think that's the whole point. But he didn't actually do anything in it necessarily because
I didn't know if it was building towards this, he let Fisk down and Fisk forgave him. And he was kind of that. I thought it was maybe heading somewhere like that with Daniel, where he was going to be this is your shot. You messed up, but you have a shot to make it right. And then you can keep moving up the ranks, but this is the do or die moment. And he maybe kind of, I don't know. I couldn't tell if that was me reading into the narrative there, or because to your point, I'm just not quite sure what the inclusion of Buck in the flashback was actually meant to accomplish, other than just rooting him in the history of.
You mean was show. That night also important to Buck and now Daniel, a threefold, right? You're asking. Yeah, I didn't think of it a ton through that lens. I was thinking through it, just thinking, okay, they're showing you that he's been around. Okay. On that note, I think that is the thing that worked for me, Daniel and Buck, this episode, partially because I don't fully understand what's happening. How much does Buck know? Does Buck think that Daniel is leaking, or does Buck think that, is Daniel the one reporting this stuff, or is Daniel telling BB? Does he know it's BB? That was kind of an interesting thing I didn't know. Yeah. And then as they were driving, I was also wondering, is Buck taking Daniel to kill Daniel? Is Buck taking Daniel to force him to kill BB? Part of me thought Buck has BB captured somewhere because he knows it's her. And now as your growth to prove your trust and loyalty, you must kill BB. And what was going to happen there? Then it wasn't that either, but I kind of trying to guess. And then it's a body in the back of a car, which I think is the other sailor, right?
Yeah. The first mate.
I think so.
Yeah.
And then is he just meaning, by the way, that you can either chop him up or you can bury him, dig the hole?
Yeah, yeah. He was clearly...
Hanukkah and I were discussing the... why do you need to chop him up if you're going to bury him? Is it just that he's unrecognizable? And then we were we both were we haven't killed a lot of people.
You don't need as big of a hole that way, maybe?
I guess we don't... we don't know a lot of Jenga. My gosh, that's dark.
I think...
But that was intriguing to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I you could tell that it was going to be some kind of bait and switch, because I don't, he wouldn't forecast it that clearly if his intention was actually to kill Daniel. But so I think it was an intentional, I feel like he knows that Daniel has been sloppy and he knows that the leak probably came from him, but I think he maybe doesn't think it was intentional. So I think it was kind of a, scare him straight, but not overtly threaten. But I am curious, he tells BB exactly she's in critical condition, and then that's the story that gets out. But I kind of I don't necessarily think that BB would have leaked that.
I agree. I don't think BB immediately left the hospital and called the news and said, she's at this hospital in critical condition. I don't, she's not dumb.
And that doesn't, I just don't think that really helps her. Her whole thing is kind of the underground guerrilla.
Right.
So I don't, why would it help her to leak this stuff to the media? Especially because like she needs the access for more important stories. Right. So she knows she would be kind of burning her credibility.
I'm with you. Same read. I didn't think that maybe somebody else, or I didn't think she did it. I do also under the what worked, I really enjoy in this season the aspect ratio changes.
Oh, yeah. I know.
They're using
that too.
Them, I think, the right amount. It's more than I've ever remembered. Like, I can't remember another show kind of like this.
Yeah.
Where they're using it for all different effects. In this case, they were kind of zooming it in to the more full screen aspect ratio to kind of show when someone was dreaming. Obviously, also when they're flashing back, because the old Netflix show was that aspect ratio, the full screen.
Right.
So, but they've used it in this show for Daredevil's powers, his hearing ability. They've used it when like someone's dying or Foggy is fading away, like that it kind of shrinks, like it's getting like more distant. And then they've used kind of a similar thing with dream sequences. So I think it's kind of fun. And then I also want to give a shout out to, they really nailed the coloring of the original Netflix.
True. Like
there's a very clear difference in how it's colored. When
it's almost
like
greenish hue.
It is greenish hue.
Yeah.
I thought almost too much, but then I went back and saw some clips from the original seasons. That was the hue for some reason. That's the coloring they went with. And so just props to that department.
No, that's a good shout. It's not quite the level of like, I always remember that courtroom scene in the Daredevil movie that like everyone just looks like sick. Like it's like they're like the fluorescent lights are just like it's horrible to look at. And at least the Daredevil Netflix like courtroom scenes, they put them in like the, you know, fancy, nice, what you expect from a courtroom. But in the movie, they're like, no, this is like,
I don't remember that, but I trust you.
I'll have to find it.
Send me a picture of all the sick people.
No, you're right. That was I thought, you know, and the hair, the matte hair was dead on. I think, yeah, like again, for me, the episode was very much a net positive. Like I really liked all the character work, for the reasons we've discussed. I really love I think it's important in shows like this or movies, like in superhero, projects, to get consistent looks into the minds of the heroes, because I think sometimes you can fall into this trap where you're focusing so much on the villain or these new side characters that are inevitably introduced that the hero himself or herself can kind of become one note. Like, I think this is an issue that I see a lot in like...
That's a great call out too, for sure.
Like, especially in long-running things, which Daredevil has now become one of the more long-running projects, period, within
Marvel.
Why
we talk about this with all the Avengers too, that either we want this or the actors at some point go, hey, I don't want to just do, here's Iron Man with another problem and now I'm solving it. Like at some point you got to do something different, aka Fat Thor, Hulk, you know, Smart Hulk, all this different stuff.
So I think for Matt, you know, like we've seen him go through all this stuff and you know, what we've talked about, I think sometimes the default can be how much can you take away from these characters and then bounce back. And they've done that a lot with Daredevil. And again, that's fair to the comics. I think a lot of people view that character as the, like a challenge to how much can we torture Matt Murdock. But I think it's nice to do more than that, like to show what he's thinking about and what's driving him. And
agreed.
Especially like with the kind of building tension with him and Karen. And that was another, like I really liked kind of ending the episode there because I'm genuinely curious to see what, you know, what the next part of that conversation is. Because obviously Karen is not thrilled that he's brought Bullseye back.
She doesn't have as much mercy for this situation, you know. She's a little more Team Frank with let's just let him die.
But I love like...
It's a great setup.
Great
to have the three of them in the same room. Ooh.
And for him to have the, like, have gone through that process of like, well, this is what Foggy would want though. And so like you can see why he, like if we didn't have all that, and I think this is real, if we didn't have all that and Matt just showed back up with Bullseye and is like, no, but Karen, like we can't kill him. We can't just let him die. There would be this part of me that's like, ah, come on, yeah, man. Right. Like I don't, but I think now because of this, I would buy that take. Like I see why he's really torn. And I loved the line from Matt, by the way, that like
about the rooftop.
Yeah, when he's like, you killed me, now you're trying to save me. Like, and he's like, no, I'm trying to save you because I tried to kill you.
Yeah.
And I, that's consistent with Matt. So I think like there are a couple of, for me, big picture, there are a couple little things that I question, but I think all of the like the bones of it, like the character work, I'm really grateful for. And I think the pacing of it is going to pay off as we start like ramping up speed again, getting to the the end of this. And
it's also probably the first episode where I felt like if you binged it, it will work better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Carrier. I want to say one other positive. My other thing this is obvious. I'm thankful they let Vanessa die. You know, when the episodes picked up and started off, I was like, oh man, they're gonna not have her die, and that was just like a traumatic event. And I feel like, you know, as we often talk about in these comic book movies, like we need consequences that are long lasting and not just that she can come back. And if you actually go back through the Netflix stuff, she's had a few times where like she had to go away to a different country.
Yeah.
And so she's kind of already been in and out. And I thought to now again kind of like bring her away, but then bring her back again, back to life and back in the fold, was just a missed opportunity. And this I'm thankful for because we got the best of both worlds. We got the character development we talked about so many times already. Yeah. And we talked about the acting performances we got because of it. But I think she needs to be gone for stuff to really get rolling. So I am thankful that that's how it ended. Because literally when it first started, I said, oh, they're not killing her? To Annika, that was like out of my mouth. That's what happened.
But then it made it more of a gut punch when they did.
That's what I'm saying. So we got the best of both worlds. Yeah. That was my last thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of these I'll say for our next segment. So I guess my last thing here is, to your point, and this is, I would just say, pure preference from me. And I think, especially if you look back at the Netflix series as a model, like it was such a slow burn that I think this episode is nowhere near what like certain episodes of the Netflix stuff was in terms of just like simmering. But I think that I've so enjoyed the kind of fast paced, like the kind of building crime drama procedural mixed with like really fun action sequences.
That's right.
That there is a part of me that just like missed not having any action sequences here.
That's right.
But again, that's a preference thing. I think that there are probably a lot of people I could see why this would be a high point of the series for certain people. Like I know we've talked about this, Greg, who writes our newsletter. I think he said this is his favorite episode of season two. And it's one of those things where like, I think that that's like, I can absolutely see why that would be the case because it's so like, it has kind of some of that stuff in like Moon Knight episode 5 that we talk about where it's just this like, you're really digging in and you're getting some great performances and it's like emotionally like complex. But I think that for me, like that stuff supports and I think like it contextualizes other parts of the series that I think I will then like even more. But I think this in and of itself would not, because of my own preference, be like my personal high point. I think it would help to lead to more highs down the line, and maybe even retroactively, you know, like because I do like the additional glimpses that we've gotten.
Okay, let's just get to ranking it. We have three segments remaining, but after a quick word from our sponsors, I'm going to tell you why it's a little bit unique today. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Your mental health is so important, guys. And I know what it feels like when some days feel good, other days feel overwhelming. Sometimes it's hard for me to sleep. There are things that keep me up at night. There are things that distract me. I have friends going through all kinds of hard stuff, divorce, sickness, job loss, and yet other days feel really great where things just seem to really be going your way. But the truth is, no journey should be done alone. Having someone walk through all of that with you, to listen, to understand, and to support you can make all the difference in the world. Well, this month of May is an opportunity to check in with yourselves and understand where you're at right now. It's Mental Health Awareness Month. There's never been a better time. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, stuck, anxious, or unsure, it's okay to acknowledge that, and it's okay to have those feelings. They're more common than you think, and you don't have to navigate them alone. BetterHelp is here to help. BetterHelp is online therapy, and they have therapists that work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed within the United States. They do all the matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. You don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up now and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Oh, by the way, this is a friend of mine.
I am Groot!
You save the good stuff for special occasions?
So for just following up like we normally would do, were there any larger MCU discussions or?
I don't think so. I was going to make just two quick points. One, do you think we are getting a Claire, like Rosario Dawson appearance?
I feel like yes. And that was the nurse comment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That'll be fun.
Yeah. If not here, then in season three, for sure.
I liked Claire.
Yeah.
If that could lead to a Luke Cage. I don't know where the things left off between Claire and Luke, but I wonder if that's an intro there. That's my other comment on just following up. Not MCU per se. I said last time, I kind of love that we haven't gotten a hint at or like an actual appearance of Jessica yet. This is the first episode where, and I want to be careful here, it's not that I'm like, oh, we need Jessica Jones because this season is weak and we need more cameos. I think if you told me that Jessica Jones was never going to show up in this season, it wouldn't really alter my feelings on it.
Canon that.
Yeah, I'd be like, okay, that's, you know, we haven't heard anything about Jessica Jones for like 10 years, so that's fine.
But because she was part of the marketing.
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit, like even the episode today, like the little trailer that they play beforehand, it leans so much into the Jessica Jones stuff that I'm like, okay, we're now over halfway through the season. And yeah. Like, we didn't even like end this episode with a cliffhanger. And I think that's more of a marketing quibble for me where I don't know. It feels a little bit like they're dangling this thing and having us like wait and see which, like when it pays off. And
but practically speaking, when would she have been needed? Like would Daredevil been like, I'm dragging Bullseye out of here. We need to call Jessica.
I'm with you there. I think that it's just kind of more like what we've talked about before with trailers where I'm like, I don't like if you're going to not introduce this until the back, like,
yeah,
35% of the show or whatever, like, don't lead with that in the initial marketing and keep hammering it as though, right. Like, because then you're just going to wind up frustrating people. And
yeah,
like, I'm not even that frustrated with it as a fan.
Sure. But it had to be noted. It's the hard balance a little bit with all trailers for me in general. Like, I think in a perfect world, if I knew a Christopher Nolan movie was coming out this summer, I actually don't need to see anything. Like, I'm going to go.
Right.
And I'm going to be a 10 out of 10 excitement regardless. And so how much of that do you lean into with fans versus we have to reveal this thing to market it? Think about, like, why in the world was Red Hulk ever marketed in Captain America? Because I feel like if I literally knew nothing about that, it would have been a huge, cool moment
right.
that, oh, my goodness, Ross is also turning into Hulk.
Right.
But they were worried that people weren't going to go watch the movie if you didn't see that there was another element to it. Yeah. So they put it in the trailer. I feel like, yeah, if you were going to wait for Kristen Ritter to show up till episode 6, maybe don't put her in the marketing at all. And then when she shows up next week, we'd be like, holy crap, Jessica Jones is in this show.
I mean,
and we would have been like, oh, that makes so much sense to the story. Like, that's what he was referring to when he said Jess earlier. Oh, it is Jessica Jones. Like, that's so cool they pulled that off.
Like, I think about...
But they're also thinking, if we market her, maybe people will watch the show that watched the Netflix stuff and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's... Yeah. No, I think that's probably fair. And maybe there are... I'd be curious to see what the breakdown is and how much that has moved the needle for people. I think I always tend to prefer trailers that give me a sense of like the vibe more than they do give me plot elements.
Like Inception, but, a trailer of like dreams and like a city's collapsing and you're right. Like, oh, I have no idea what we're talking about, but I like
Interstellar,
the vibe.
Like the trailer is just like him driving the truck through the cornfield crying and then the music in the background and the countdown.
Which has like nothing to do with, it's not nothing to do.
Tells you nothing about what, it just gives you a sense
space of. Space movie, right.
And you kind of are like, this is what it's going to feel like, which is, you know, true. But anyway.
That is right, yeah.
Not like, not a complaint with this episode specifically, but it is a thought I had when the credits rolled.
Well, I can't think of any other larger MCU ties. Listeners, please chime in if you have one. Because of the nature of the flashback, we spent a lot of time reflecting on earlier years. I don't remember missing, other than Claire, that's a good one.
And finding out, I guess, that Fisk used to like, when they were at their old firm, we now know that Fisk was basically paying their bills, sort of like in a roundabout way.
Yes. But does that really, that doesn't have greater MCU ties.
No, I mean, it just kind of like fleshes out the general. Sure. Love the it. Universe, but yeah.
Okay, from a friend.
Yes! Hey, we know each other. He's a friend from work.
This is another weird segment because I started recording. If you saw me earlier, I was looking at my phone. I realized I did not prepare any kind of question from somebody, but then I realized this is why I didn't prepare a question. It's because this week, I'm just going to say this, I was going to use our chat with the Newton brothers as our From a Friend segment. And I'm just going to tell our audience, we literally got sniped like by Disney and Kevin Feige and team.
Feige.
We had an interview scheduled. It's not actually Kevin. I'm kind of being funny, but we had an interview scheduled and Disney like found out about the interview and said they're not wanting any interviews to come out until after May 5. I think the finale.
Yeah. I think the problem is we're just too powerful.
We have such a large platform and we move so many things when we speak that they were like, whoa. What
they're like, we have a Daredevil podcast of our own now and you guys are threatening us and we can't have that.
Our interview got sniped. So I don't have a From a Friend.
It is still happening. It is happening. It's just been pushed. So we should be. But
That was an anti-Disney comment for all the people who think we're Disney shills. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
We got sniped by Disney.
I do appreciate the every interaction we've had with the Newton brothers has been so great, and
I look forward to speaking with them again.
Yeah, like and the way that they handled that, I thought was really great. Where they very much made it clear that
they want to do.
They're still looking forward to coming on the show and stuff. Yeah. So I'm excited, but it was funny that we got caught.
It does make me wonder a tiny bit on this from a friend and the greater MCU discussion. Just following up, it does make me wonder if something must be happening in the last few episodes. That's what I think. Why would Disney shut these down?
Yeah,
why would Disney not want anyone possible talking about the show?
Yeah, I mean,
the only reason I can think of is that there's some big stuff that's going to happen and they don't want any hint of like the Newton brothers either even talking about like a Luke Cage theme or something they had to come up with. Like they don't want anything. Oh, that one shout out to Spider-Man. We didn't want, you know, we had to come up with a little, you know, whatever. That's my only guess. Otherwise, why wouldn't you want people talking about your episode every week? So...
Well, yeah, we'll it is. That is interesting. Because I mean, we've had other we've had plenty of interviews with, like, with people midway through the show. I mean, and Natalie Holt, when we had her on during Loki season two, even right. kind of hinted at some of the musical stuff she was doing in the final episodes.
Right. Unless so, Disney has just changed. I mean, Christoph Beck, I think we talked to during the middle of the...
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, if so, I'm cool with that. If yeah. they're like, I would rather them... That shows me that they are... that they're invested in kind of creating a moment, which I think is always better for everybody. I do, like, I am mostly joking, but like 10% serious that, you know, they do have this. This is the first time there's been an official Marvel Studios podcast that's accompanying a show. And I just, you know, like, I have to imagine they're not limiting their access to the talent.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Little bitter and jaded. Let's rank this bad boy for the file. File this away.
You have to go first this time. I went first last time.
I'll go first this time. That's totally fair. I think people understand where I'm coming from at this point, and I feel like this is a safe space, you know? Yeah. I'm going to say a B minus. I think I said B or B minus for the first episode. I think I liked the first episode. Well, I know I liked the first episode better. This is my least favorite episode of the show so far. And it is really fascinating when you bring up Greg and how much he loved this episode and like had been hyping it up. Because it kind of goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of this episode and off air. It different things for different audiences, you know, like different storylines are always going to resonate with people. I use this one all the time. It's really difficult for me to watch the first 5 minutes of Thor: Love and Thunder. Yeah. And I can totally see how for some people that's like, oh, okay, cool. Good start. Or I'm sad. Like to me, it like wrecks me.
Yeah.
My wife and I finished that movie not too long ago. And we were crying at the end, and I just don't do that. So there's something about the way that's executed that's really speaking to my core. And it's funny, like this episode spoke to Greg. It doesn't speak to me. I watched it as a fan of Daredevil, but this is not... If every episode somehow was like this, Daredevil would not be one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair.
I also think there's a little bit of a casualty here because that was the case. And again, tying back everything we talked about, it just so happened that this week I was incredibly stunned and flabbergasted by the ending of Begonia and DTF St. Louis. Right. So my headspace was very occupied. I watched Begonia on Sunday and on Saturday and DTF on Sunday.
Yeah.
And so this is now Tuesday watching this, and I think there's a little bit of it didn't live up to those two, which to be fair is a Best Picture nominee and like a very well-received HBO show right now. Just that moment didn't. Whereas I would say the rest of Daredevil has. And so I think my head was a little bit occupied. So I'm a little bit lower because of preference of a clip show, because it feels like a little bit of the momentum came to a halt. Because of a few of the like de-aging things and character questions that you're asking me to kind of buy into the time period. And because I think my head was a little bit preoccupied with these other things that were so amazing. B minus.
Yeah. See, I'm torn here. But I think my gut says B plus.
Okay. I love it. We need to be different at times.
which I think is good. I think I'm torn between B and B plus because I'm with you in that I'm looking back at some of the other episodes earlier in the series. Like to me, it's clear that I do not feel this week the same I felt last week in terms of just like, you know, everything really
just
hitting
clicking,
and,
yeah.
But I do think that like comparing this to some of the earlier episodes, I think that they are both doing different things very well. And,
agreed.
And again, I do think that like certain moments here landed so well for me that I think a B plus is warranted, but I think it's a step down in part Well, just, you know, because of the things that we talked about in terms of little execution pieces. But I am curious to see kind of what the hardcore Netflix, like diehard reaction is episode.
That's a good call out. I actually haven't done a ton of like Twitter digging. I'm curious.
Yeah.
I saw our Discord. People loved it, which is great. So yeah. I'd be curious if there was some Netflix viewers that were on the fence, if this tipped them one way or the other. Like, oh, you're trying too hard. Not my scene. Yeah. Or, oh my gosh, Daredevil's back. You know, peak.
I mean, I could see, like, Wesley. Yeah, but as my parting comment, I meant to say this earlier, because this is yet another episode that in a very different way felt so much like a comic book to me. Like, you have that, I mean, you've probably even noticed this in some of the books that you've read, like in the Winter Soldier comic, there's a lot of kind of playing with time and doing these flashbacks to this other era. And you can do that really easily in comics because you don't have to worry about actors aging or anything like...
Yeah, sure. Just like draw them younger.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. But there were things like that where it really did feel like even the pacing of it, where you have this moment and then it's like the page turn would then lead you back to this flashback or vice versa. So I should say in general, I like that it's kind of continuing that feel where it still feels like I'm picking up a Daredevil comic, and I love that.
Agreed. Okay, here's how I'm going to close us today. I just want to briefly say that this is a big week. It's always a little bit weird when you're listening to this, but it's CinemaCon happening right now in Las Vegas. I don't know if you saw yesterday or Monday. No, Monday night. So Monday night was the Sony panel, and there were two new posters for Brand New Day. Did you see them?
Yeah.
Looked pretty cool.
Yeah. Very much leaning into the like the Raimi aesthetic, which I'm totally here for.
Totally. No like crazy news, but they did talk about how excited they are for the film and that this is the best work Tom Holland's ever done. And then we got some updates on the third Into the Spider-Verse film, which is next summer, officially now, June something next summer, which I'm so stoked on. I'm obsessed with those movies. And apparently they did show a clip to those people. Yesterday, Tuesday night, was the, what is it, Warner's panel. So then the first 7 minutes of Dune Part 3 were shown to people. Nice. And apparently that looked amazing. Literally somebody said Dune is going to be our Lord of the Ring, like this generation's Lord of the Ring trilogy, which that's maybe a little bit, I mean, Lord of the Rings is up there with awards, but anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I agree with the sentiment.
Yeah. I could see it from a quality perspective being
right. What you're trying to pull off.
Yeah. I think cultural relevance, it's going to be really hard to ever top. Like there were like when I was in seventh grade, there were girls in my class that had like Legolas folders.
I totally agree.
I don't know if you're going to get to that level, but.
No, and that transitions perfectly into tomorrow night, Thursday night, is Disney's turn. And there are rumors that Disney's going to go big. That some of Avengers Doomsday might be shown. Maybe there's an announcement for another movie that we don't even know or something. You know, like something could be happening on Thursday. So by the time you're listening to this, depending on when you get the episode, be on the lookout for that because there might be some news there. But I don't know if you saw that I share with you. I don't know how much stock. Again, I don't know how much stock is put into these kinds of things, but a very large verified, what would you call it? Leaker, rumor mill generator, but like one of the main accounts said that they've been showing Avengers Doomsday to certain people and that it's testing really well. It's testing on the level of Avengers Infinity War. And some people saying it's testing as the best movie they've ever made.
And did you say that was like the pre-reshoots version?
That was before they added some stuff, apparently. That's what the one tweet said, yeah. But then on top of that, what you said about the Dune cultural moment, there's these audience tests about the excitement level of upcoming projects and like box office forecast. And multiple sources have verified that like Variety, I don't know, a bunch of people have said like, okay, one, Doomsday is going to be by far the largest box office this year. Like they know it. Like even Dune knows it, apparently. Mm-hmm. That like, it's just because they do these polls and like, it was something like, even comparing to Dune Part 3, audience interest for Doomsday was like 53% and for Dune, it was like 29%. And like overall awareness was like double for Avengers Doomsday than it is for Dune Part 3. And I'm not trying to make it a rivalry because I'm going to love both of them. I'm not making it a rivalry. I'm just saying to the, per the cultural moment thing, like even
that makes sense to me.
Right. Yeah. I think it's going to be more of a thing that there's an Avengers movie.
Yeah. You know? And I to that point, I think I am kind of grateful that like as much as I thought the marketing was a little bit mangled when it came to the Thunderbolts new Avengers stuff, like where they kind of started using new Avengers halfway through the theatrical run
to try
to get people in. Like it does make me a little bit grateful for that because I think that you need to save that, like, I don't think you need people to be thinking, oh, a new Avengers movie, and it be all characters that are like to them B-level characters. Like, I think that there is going to be a real force to like, hey, there is a new Avengers movie out with Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth, like, where I just think people are going to be curious if nothing else.
Yeah. And let's just say this, if it is Infinity War, I can't tell you how badly I'm craving that kind of feeling again. Like my whole cinematic life, not my life, but like when I'm watching movies, it's constantly just looking for the next new thing that I don't know what's going to happen. And can I get that same feeling?
Just chasing that rush, man.
Yeah.
Chasing that rush.
But think about this. Can you imagine if we get to sit in a theater and watch Infinity War without knowing what's going to happen?
I mean,
like if it is that good.
Yeah.
I think this whole time I've been operating under the principle of I'm so excited, but there's no way it can top like Endgame, which again is probably true. But if it actually does.
I mean, and it's also worth noting, like, I think there are a lot of people that listen to our podcast that have said things like this. Like, I think Infinity War and Endgame were weirdly the catalyst for a lot of people, like, to dive deeper. Like, there had been people that had been following along loosely, had maybe seen like a quarter of the Marvel movies and then saw that because it was a big event, saw those, and then kind of dug back in. Or like
us connecting even.
Yeah, like there's a spectrum there, but I do think that there's a world where some of the projects that we've talked about that were really underappreciated of the last couple of years, I think can suddenly get a new lease on life if Doomsday hits the right
way. That's a great point. How many people had watched like the first Avengers and Iron Man, and maybe they saw like Winter Soldier or something, and then all of a sudden their friends asked them to go to Infinity War or Endgame, and they watched Infinity War and then went, oh my gosh, I'm going to go watch
Ragnarok.
I'm going to go watch every movie though. I'm going to start over.
Right.
Because I don't fully understand where this is. Could that happen again? Whatever happens in Secret Wars, will there be a generation of people going, wow, that was unbelievable. Let's go back to WandaVision.
Right. And by the way, on that note, and this is the last thing that I have to go, but I do think we will have up, I've been working on this, on the site, a page that will kind of
help walk through
some different watch order things. And one of them I think will be designed at like a streamlined, like if you want to either after watching Doomsday or prior to that, really watch the things that are like the essential components to kind of get you there from what we can tell. You know, here's a way to do that that I think would make that a lot easier of a watch, and I think a lot easier to track and just kind of a fun way to do it. So I'm doing some mad scientist stuff.
So busy, which I totally understand. So my favorite thing in the world is when I am somehow surprised that you've been behind the scenes working on something. Like my dream is that one day I get a text like, hey, I finished a book about the MCU. Here it is. What? You've been doing that this whole time? Thanks for listening, guys. I can't wait to see how Daredevil closes. We'll be back here next week talking about episode 6 right here on Friends for More.